emotions or strong reactions, right? The first thing before we can even try to do anything about it, we must be able to recognize it and become aware of it. Because if you don't, you're not aware, you'll simply be carried along by the momentum of the emotion. So the awareness of the recognition comes first. And then depending on how strong is that awareness or that recognition, then that determines how much, what's the possibility. If the recognition is, you recognize it, but it's not so strong, that means you are still very much under the control of that reactivity. Let's say anger. So I kind of know that I'm getting angry. No, I can feel the heat, and I can hear it in the tone of my voice. But then I can't do anything about it. You know, the words just keep tumbling up, and so I know this is not going well. But anyway, it just carry on. You know, because I'm already in a kind of automatic pilot. You know, I'm just reacting. So in those situations, there's nothing much you can do about it. In a way, the power of control is not with you. Right? The only thing you do better than previously is that at least you are aware that you are losing your temper. No, but there's no, in those situations, there's no possibility of transformation because you simply, you just are not able to even do anything about the momentum of the reaction. Right? Okay. Now, suppose if your awareness of the situation of your reactivity is much stronger, that means there is what sometimes people call a pause, but you, the word is almost at the tip of your tongue, but you somehow are able to just hold it back at 1 second. Right? So there's a pause. When you are able to do that, that presents you with the possibility of doing something different or even of transformation. Okay. So the very first thing, actually, I think when we talk about transformation, we really need to train is mindfulness. And awareness. If the mindfulness and awareness are not strong enough, everything else will be just theoretical. There is absolutely no possibility of doing anything different at all. And when the awareness is strong enough, then you experience this sensation of there's a pause, there's a kind of space or open up in which you can, like a fork of the road, you know, you can choose to just follow your old habit, your old way of doing it. Or you can do something different with it. Yeah. Right. And that different is up to you. Okay. And that is where you can transform the energy. You can feel the anger been building up. But you can, because you have that awareness, you have that mental space, then you can channel that energy in a different way. So you can, in other words, instead of going down the old road of anger, you might decide to make use of that energy, but try to bring forth, let's say, a compassionate kind of motivation. And use the same energy, but with a different motivation to deal with the situation. Okay. So this person is pissing you off. You're really, really very upset with this person. Right? But just as you're about to say something, you kind of manage to catch yourself. Right? And you say, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to repeat the same old pattern. But then you try to find a different way to respond, right? So for example, if you manage to, you can remember about compassion. So I'm still going to speak, but now instead of speaking from anger, from our anger, I try to speak out of compassion. If you can do it, then that compassion carries the same energy of the response, but it's different, it's motivated differently, and you will come across very differently for the other person. They will experience you, they notice the strength of what you're saying, but they may notice the absence of aggression, which is what usually accompanies anger. When you come out of a compassionate place of compassion, people can recognize there is a quality of kindness inside that. You know, that you're not just venting your anger on them, but you are trying to you're trying to put across something, maybe in a strong way, firm way, but there is energetically, they feel a bit different. And also instinctively they may respond differently. Yeah. Because we are very sensitive to the emotions behind other people's reactions. Are they speaking out of anger and aggression or violence? Or are they speaking out of from a place of kindness and compassion? Yeah. So that's actually how I think most of us, that what I would call transformation. That although what has been triggered might be something like not so helpful, like attachment or jealousy or anger, but with awareness, then we try to channel that energy in a different direction. We try to find a different way. We still have to respond, so we try to respond differently from a different place. Yeah. It's kind of a bit theoretical, but that's the best I can say. Yeah. Okay. So let's start today's session. So welcome back, and this is I think the second thing. Teach all these classes and they all sort of blend together. And so last week I introduced the topic of appreciating our precious human life. Yeah. So today I want to continue with that. So just a recommendation, if you are very interested to find or to just read something about this topic that I'm talking about analytical meditation, which we will relook at again today. I think this is a really good book to look at, this by my teacher, Venerable Sangha Kadro, Kathleen McDonough, How to Meditate. You can find free copy downstairs at the free distribution. And why I recommend this over more traditional, like translation of classic Tibetan texts on this topic, is that actually one of the big hurdle for us to kind of integrate the Buddha's teaching and try to experience it is the background, the difference in both cultural background, in terms of time, in terms of place, in terms of culture, right? You may not notice it, but actually, we live a very different life from, let's say, for example, Tibetans living in old Tibet, or the Indians, you know, gather around Shakyamuni Buddha 2,500 years ago. There is the difference in culture, the difference in language, the difference in the time and the customs. Yeah. So teachings are always kind of dependent on all these factors. It's not like they are independent. No. So it's very helpful when someone like Venerable Sangha Kadro, who has been ordained for many years and practicing, someone who come from a different culture, like for example from the West, from America, but in a way we are quite similar to most of those of us living in modern society. Right? So someone has taken many years to kind of learn and try to integrate the classic teaching, and then they present it out of their own understanding and their own experience. In this case, when we wrote a book like this, it's like someone eating pre-digested food, right? It's easier to digest, trust me, okay? Most of us are just suffering from indigestion. You know, we listen, and then we swallow. No, we take a exam, you know, Singaporeans, we like exam, even in Buddhist center, also at examination. And then so basically you stuff your head full of information, right? But it's not easy to digest that information, make it kind of relevant to yourself, kind of, you know, bridge the gap between what the teaching is talking about and your day-to-day life, your challenge at work or at home, your inner experiences. So that gap, there is a gap there. And when someone who has similar background with us, and they make an effort, that if you were to read their experience, you listen to them, and they have done their work, right? And so they make it easier for us on our part to also do our work. So I really recommend this book, and it presents analytical meditation. It goes through a few topics that I will be covering. And so sometimes but usually I don't give notes. I'm very lazy these days. I used to have notes, and then I noticed the notes, not necessarily in Singapore, but other places, notes goes into if they're nice, they put it to a folder and never to be seen again. Or they go into her friend, she goes into her, you know, the car door, there's this pocket there, you know. So she, that's the collection of drama notes that goes into that. And then again, of course, you know, it's never going to come out again, right? So after a while, I decided, I just saved the trouble. So, but if you want something to read, this is a good book, and give you some ideas and something to refer to and refer back to. Yeah. Okay. So last week I will talk about this topic of appreciating our precious human life, and I present in terms of one meditation of thinking back and bringing to mind events and experiences, you know, from our own past or our own present, and to appreciate what we are endowed with, all the wonderful things that we have that make our lives so unique and so precious. Yeah. So, and in that meditation, I use a metaphor. I ask you to imagine taking a cruise down the river of your life, you know, starting from the beginning and cruising down, and along the way, you know, revisiting some of the aspects of your own life experiences. You know, and try to pick up the, there were probably a lot of rubbish, yeah, but there will be a few gems here and there, and so you will to pick up the gems, you know, to collect the gems, to string them up, you know, so that each one of the gems represents something quite special to you, very meaningful to you, and allow you to appreciate your life for what it is. So that at the end you have a collection. I hope you do have a collection. Yeah, since I'm a pessimist, I'm always worried about this kind of thing. So, and you have a collection of a bracelet, you know, or a tiny mara, you know, at least 7 of them, or, I mean, whole life. For sure you can find something good in your life, right? Don't have too high a standard, okay? So, and then you can see your life through that particular point of view and appreciate it, you know, and kind of value it for what it is. And that is the whole idea, to develop a sense of appreciation and to be able to see and recognize what is wonderful and precious in your life. But there are also difficult things, painful things, unpleasant things in our life. We all have it. Yeah. And then you don't have to pick it up, right? I ask you to pick the gem. So why do you can pick the rubbish, right? And then string out the rubbish and say, oh, this is a rubbish life. Right? And that is one of the challenges when we do this kind of analytical meditation. Good. For example, like me being a pessimist, I'm very good at collecting rubbish, you know. So especially when I'm in low mood and I'm feeling down, I'm very upset in my life, I'm very good at collecting rubbish. And I remember all the rubbish, like, oh, I failed this, I'm useless in that, oh, this is terrible, that one is also terrible. So I can easily, it's not a necklace, okay? It's like a mile-long kind of collection of rubbish all strung together and say, well, this is a terrible life. Yes, no, it's no, not worth living anymore. Yeah. Okay, that is, let's say, my habits. And when you do this kind of analytical meditation, you will come face to face with your habits of thinking and feeling and how you see things. Because they're the one you're most familiar with, and you, when you try to meditate, they will come up. So here I ask you to collect gems, and you become like Arangguni like that. You start to collect all your rubbish, you know, and then you realize, oh, this collection of gems, this collecting gem, I'm asking you to do it, sounds so unnatural, so artificial, so difficult to do, you know. The rubbish is so much easier to collect, yeah. And that's the point of this meditation, is to change your habits, is to cultivate something different. I mean, of course, if you want the Arangguni and collect junk, I won't stop you, but that's not the point of the meditation, right? And that may be what you are most familiar with, and most habituated to. And here I'm precisely asking you, or the practice asking you, to do something different. Try something new. Let something different and new come into your experience, come into your view, so that you can have a different feeling. You can discover a different perspective. So that is the challenge. You find that it's almost like, quite often people say they feel meditation, this kind of meditation is very unnatural. Because you're kind of like going against, some habits, right? Some usual way of thinking and seeing things. And that is precisely because I want something new to come into it. I want something different, right? So you will notice that your distraction will usually be back to what you are familiar with. You probably ask you to think about happy times. What you do? You think about unhappy times will come to mind. So all the awful things and the terrible suffering and how your hard life has been. Yeah, I know, but we're not meditating on that. No, we're meditating on something different. So therefore it becomes a distraction. You distract your mind from what you are looking at, what you are investigating. So therefore you need to return your attention and come back and ask, what is so precious and wonderful in my life? Right? And so you leave the garbage, the junk. You can collect them later if you want, but you go and look for the gem. Right? So you keep finding this, almost a little bit of a tug of war, but not much. Yeah. But it's the idea is to repeatedly come back to the theme of the meditation and explore that theme and try to be aware when you are you kind of go a different way. You go back the same old way. Like for example, I might go back to my own depressing view of my life and then no, not going there today. I come back and think about the wonderful things in my life. In a different kind of meditation, where I think of compassion for myself, sure, I would just go down the depressing way and say, oh yes, I'm very worthy of compassion. Life has been really hard on me. Yeah. But not for this meditation. Because in order to build up a different way of looking at your life, to be able to appreciate the good things in my life, appreciate the values of this life, I need to pick up different things. Things that maybe I normally don't think about, or I don't remember, or I don't value them. Now I have to make them come to the forefront of my attention and make them the focus of the meditation. So I hope that makes some sense. And this makes analytical meditation a bit more challenging than breath meditation. Breath meditation, oh, I'm not with the breath. Okay, I'll come back to the breath. No big deal, right? No, it's kind of simple. But this one seems to require you to put a bit more energy and pay a bit more attention. And so that makes it a little bit more difficult. But if you don't do that, think of it this way. It's like our old habit is like a river, again like a river. And we are trying to change the course of that river. Because we know that if we keep going down that way, we'll just keep being unhappy, or we keep the old habits are continuously, we're in the control of our old habits and we want to change. So that means we want to divert or change the course of that river. So how do we do it? Now, what you start with, at the bank of the river, at the place where you want it to divert the flow of the river, you make a tiny little drain, tiny one. Right. Then, so a little bit of the water will divert down the drain. Almost insignificant compared to the amount of water that go down the normal course. Right? But that's a good beginning. So we start little, we start to think in a different way. We start to see our life differently. We start to recollect different kinds of memories from what we used to do. So slowly as we do that, that diversion will get, as the water flow will get deeper, will get wider, and we are creating a side branch of the river. Some of our energy of that river is flowing in a different direction, in a new direction. And if you persevere, gently, each time you flow, it will automatically deepen the bank. It will automatically create a lot more volume of water to flow down this new branch of the river. A day will come when the new one is bigger than the old one. Then all the water will flow down this new one. And what happened to the old one? It's completely dry. The river disappeared from there. Right? When that happens, then you will have what we call a realization. There is a complete shift in your perspective, and therefore a complete shift in the way you think and feel, and the way you respond and behave. And so change has already happened. That old habit comes to an end and disappears. And it's been replaced by a new habit. Hopefully something more wholesome, more beneficial, more conducive to your happiness. So that's what we meant by analytical meditation. Okay, I hope that makes some sense. Yeah. So far, okay? Right. It's difficult, hard work. You know, diverting rivers. After all, you spend, I don't know, so many decades in doing the same old habit, you know, every day, So we do it all our spare time, this is no good, life is no good, life is no good, life is no good. No. So your river has been worn very deep and wide, Not like Singapore. No. We only have one river here, like Singapore River. Yeah. I used to joke about Singapore River when I was overseas. It's one of my classic jokes I tell people. I think I never realized it's a river. I thought it was a big drain or canal because it's very built up, right? It doesn't look anything like river in other countries, which is like with a natural bank. Ours is all banked up with concrete and all this kind of thing. But anyway, that's Singapore River, yeah. So let's revisit the topic again. So in this topic, practically, there are three steps to it, three points to it. First is to recognize and appreciate that we have a precious human life. It's a life we endow with certain positive qualities, right? So we have to recognize it, and not only recognize it, but also appreciate it. Oh, this is special. No. The second thing is, usually, traditionally, we appreciate the rarity, how rare it is. But I also sometimes think, you can even think how unique this life is. Yeah. Rarity is traditionally think that not everybody so blessed with all this good fortune, not blessed with all the freedoms or endowments that you may enjoy in your life, and therefore you can see how fortunate you are, but you can also see that it's not so common, and therefore makes it rare and also makes it precious. Like precious stones are more precious if they are rare, right? If they are all over the place, it's like, who cares, But it's like pebbles, Who will use pebbles as like as money for exchange? It must be something rare and therefore precious, yeah. So rarity. But, I also like to think that, in another way, you can also think of it as something unique, which is even better than rare. Unique is the only one. Your life is unique to yourself. No one has the same life as you do. So isn't it even more wonderful? Right? Becoming from a pessimist, that is very optimistic, okay? That is, not only is it precious, but it's unique. In fact, the word that I really like is unrepeatable. Even if someone tries to imitate your life, they can't do it. Not down to the detail. So your life is so unique, there's no repeat. There's only one. Precious enough, right? Like Mona Lisa, right? It's all these replicas all over the place. What's so precious about it is that one, that one thing that's hanging in the Louvre. Unique, right? That's why it's so, if Leonardo was decided to mass produce it, I'm sure the value would have dropped significantly, isn't it? Yeah. So, uniqueness. And the third one, then you having a precious and unique life, what can you accomplish with it? So that is looking into the future. So you look into the past and the present to see how precious and unique your life is. Then what are you going to do with it? That also makes it so much special, so much more wonderful. Right. So that is the third point. We ask, what can we accomplish with this life? And what do we want to accomplish in this life? And that is that sums up the whole reflection on this topic. Of appreciating our precious human life. So I talked about the first point previously, talking about looking into what we are endowed with, what are the good things that we are endowed with, and also you can also appreciate what we are free from. Traditionally, there are 8 freedoms. I just want to briefly mention it. Yeah. The first out of the 8, the first 3, freedom from states of suffering. Of unpleasantness. So you imagine if you are overwhelmed by suffering, that suffering and pain really limits you. People who suffer from chronic pain can really appreciate how the pain limits their mobility, limit the type of activity they can do, even limit the, may even limit them and prevent them from even going out of their own home, you know, because of the pain. So if you can live free from that pain, from that suffering, isn't that wonderful? The freedom of that is so much more precious. So traditionally, this is in terms of Buddhist idea of rebirth. So it's freedom from born in hell. The Buddhist hell is pretty bad. You can go to Opa Villa, where they have this. I'm not really sure it's 100% Buddhist, okay, but it's not a mixture. Then they have all this depiction of the different types of hell. I was told that I cannot recollect it. I visited it very early in my life. The Opa Villa, not the hell. Yeah. So there was photo evidence of me, my parents carrying me, and apparently I was scared. I was terrified. I can't remember. I must have amnesia of the experience of visiting. But then many years later, I revisited. I thought, I'm so scared about this thing. You know, all this fake light and fake sound and all this little figuring here and there. You know, but so that is hell. Supposed to be a state of extreme pain and suffering. Okay. The second one is freedom from being reborn as a hungry ghost. I mean, some beings who are suffering from craving, hunger, craving, and cannot be satisfied, which is also a great suffering. And that one is rebirth as the animal realm. So animal, the Buddhist way of looking at it is, it's not always politically correct by modern standards. It's overwhelmed by confusion and stupidity because they're very driven by instinct. So again, a state of suffering, in this case, suffering because you don't have the intelligence to work through problems and to avoid suffering. So these are states of suffering. But I like to think of it, you can think of it in this way, or you can think of it just to appreciate that, you know, although we do have our own aches and pains, we have our pleasant experiences, but you know, most of us are blessed not to experience extreme suffering. You know, or your life is not constantly being threatened or in danger. Because if you are, your life is being threatened. You're always in survival mode. Right? I don't know whether you've been in survival mode. You know, sometimes when people encounter great misfortune and they're in great financial insecurity, basically just, you know, you have just enough money to buy this meal, and then you don't have money to buy the next one. You don't know where to come up. You don't know where to pay the bill. How are you going to pay the bill? How are you going to pay the rent? You know, so your life is constantly insecure and always trying to survive. So when you're in that state, it's very hard to think about other things because it overwhelms you. All your resources are caught up in just trying to survive, just trying to make it through today. And that is not a wonderful, a nice place to be in. And if you are fortunate enough not to be free from that kind of suffering, to be free from constantly having to struggle for survival, and that is something really wonderful. But in comparison, okay? So that is three freedom of the eight. The fourth one is unusual, freedom from extreme pleasure. Too much suffering is no good. Too much pleasure is also no good. Buddhist certificate, right? Too much pleasure, you will be too caught up in the pleasant thing, too indulgent. There's too much enjoyment, no? One after another. So you don't have any mental space to think about something different or to be better. So from a Buddhist perspective, that's also not good. Right? Too much enjoyment, too much pleasure is not a good thing. So it's good to be free from it. So good to have neither here nor there, no? A bit of suffering, a bit of happiness, not too much of either one of them. It's good. Moderation. Okay. Then the next four freedom have to do with limitation, freedom from limitation. Limitation in terms of, like for example, physical ability. So you have limitation that limits you from doing what you want to do physically. For example, I'm half deaf. So I have if I were to become fully deaf, you know, then communication can be really difficult. You know, I can't talk deliver, and I can't hear what you have to say. So that is a limitation, isn't it? So if you are free from that kind of physical limitation due to disability or due to other reasons, then that is something wonderful. It means you have a lot more freedom, a lot more liberty than others. Okay, so physical limitation, limitation in terms of time and space. Okay, space is, again, from a Buddhist perspective, you happen to live in a place, more so in the past than now, where you have no access to Buddhist teaching. Right? So then you are, well, from a Buddhist perspective, right, you are deprived of the precious teaching of the Buddha. Isn't that terrible? No, so you so happen to live in the, and that is also very kind of discriminative, because you live in the barbaric land. You're barbarians because you are not civilized. You're not, you don't have the benefit of access to the Buddha's wonderful civilizing teaching. Okay, so this day is no problem. This day internet, no, you just go to the internet. So we are so much more fortunate this day. But that is a limitation in terms of space, location. Yeah, limitation in terms of time is, you also happen to be born at a time period where there is also no such teaching. No? The dark ages of Buddhism. Yeah. They are this idea of dark age, you know, where, you know, like, there's no Buddha, so no enlightening teaching. What are you going to do about yourself? No? But we are so fortunate. The Buddha has appeared. The teachings are still available. You can listen to podcasts. You can, in fact, there's so many information. You probably don't have enough time to digest all of them. So we have that freedom. Freedom from, in terms of time. Okay. And, the last one is the freedom in terms of our thinking, our thoughts. So traditionally they say if you hold wrong view, anything that's not Buddhist is wrong view, okay? Yeah. Right. I can be wrong, so I must be right, right? If I'm right and you're different, then you are wrong. Simple, isn't it? So don't worry about this, okay. But sometimes we hold on to certain ideas. And so that makes us we become close minded. We close ourselves. Because we feel that, oh, I already know. So when we are closed, then we wouldn't let in new information or new ideas. And that is another limitation. So suppose I already, I do be careful with my examples. Anyway, so suppose if I insist that I'm so depressed, right, you know, that this is a useless life. No, my life is useless. I may as well just die. So let's say I hold on to that view that this is a useless life. I really passionately hold on to it. I don't know why it's causing me so much suffering. But we somehow, even though we may be very miserable, we still hold on to it. This is familiar. It's all that I have. So if I hold on to it, and if you were to come and present this to you, appreciating your precious human life. So what the hell is that? Forget it. No, go away. Let me wallow in my misery. It's so much more juicy this way. I don't want to listen to your so-called precious human life. Forget about it. So that means I'm limited in that way. So even when it's presented, or even you were to say it directly to my face, I don't accept it. I may not even hear it. I won't let it in. And I'm not going to change my mind, right? So then from the Buddhist perspective, there's a limitation. I deprive myself of an opportunity to see my life differently and live it differently. And I deprive myself an opportunity for happiness. Okay? So you kind of understand this idea of freedom. So we are endowed with different types of freedom. It's good to appreciate that. So well, okay, still with me. Alright. Then the second one is about how unique your life is. The only one. This should be easy, right? No? You look around, nobody looks at you, right? You're very fortunate. So at least nobody wears the same t-shirt or shirt as you. It'd be terrible, isn't it? I don't understand why it's such a terrible thing. You appear at a gathering and where you happen to have the same shirt or dress. Why is it such a terrible thing? It just means you went to the same shop to buy the same thing, isn't it? But unlike dress and clothes, our life is unique to ourselves. individual. We all have, we come into this life under certain conditions. Even our own siblings do not have the same life as us. We may grow up in the same family, but we have different personalities, we have different life experiences, and we choose different paths. Yeah. So we share certain commonality with others, but we are not the same. We are unique. And if you can appreciate this uniqueness of how special that is. In fact, sometimes, after many years after you have gone through a difficult period, if you were to look back at it, you might appreciate that some of the greatest challenges in our life, greatest difficulties, are also times when we really grow and learn, and we matured and we become a different person, hopefully a better person. And then you can see those difficult times as kind of like blessings in disguise. Okay? And that makes our life unique. So we have our own unique, like we used to say, like better scar. You are scarred in different ways. You experience different pain, and therefore you are stronger from that. Yeah. These days they talk about what? Post-traumatic growth. Have you heard of this? We used to talk about post-traumatic disorder, right? It's a terrible, dreadful trauma. And now this recent years, they have this new idea that having gone through trauma, we grow from it. So post-traumatic growth. It's something positive that makes us more resilient, wiser. Yeah. So if you think in this way, then you say, wow, look at my life. All this happened and it's so special. It cannot be repeated. No one has the same thing and makes you so the one and only in the entire universe. You can be sure about it. Yeah. Okay. And the third point, then the teaching will ask you, so what do you want to do with this life? What do you aspire? What are your aspirations? What do you want to accomplish with this life? And this is also something important because I think I used to work in aged care, looking after senior people in the area. And I think one of the common things you probably hear is, you would say, future? Just wait to die, what's there to look forward to, right? It's not uncommon to hear that, right? It's not, well, there's so much things we can do with our life, isn't it? I mean, of course, we have other limitations as we age. But that doesn't mean life stops. You're not dead. You're waiting to die, but then you're not dead. Right? So, wouldn't it be so wonderful if, regardless of what age we are, we have new ideas, new aspirations, hopes. Hopes are very important in life, regardless of what stage of life we are in. Hopes sort of give us energy, something positive, so that we can view our life in a positive light. So this third point then makes it all the more important. What do I want to accomplish with my life? And this is unique to yourself. Okay, of course, in the teaching there are some recommended ideas you can think about, which I will explain. But I have to stress that this is something very personal. And it would be wonderful to be able to find one or more things that you aspire to. Some aspirations of uplift you, and channel your energy, physical and mental energy, and give you some hope, something to look forward to, something to work towards, something to enjoy and feel happy about when you accomplish it, or you move closer to it. So that makes life so much more wonderful. Right? So in the Buddhist teaching, this third one, they usually say there are three, one, the highest aspiration in, this is what we call Mahayana Buddhism, is to become a Buddha. It's a long, long way to it, but you can become a Buddha. Like that shining gold light. People put bananas or whatever in front of you, and you don't get to eat them, okay? But that's the Buddha, okay? And the next level is, you can achieve, even if you're not shining with golden light, you can achieve a state of what we call liberation, where you find freedom from all the suffering, all the problems. Suddenly, you arrive at a place where, they're not such a big deal anymore. You don't take them so personally anymore. That they don't, Not that you don't experience them, but they don't hurt you. So, you know, you sort of develop like a, I used to call it a buffer. The impact on you is not so severe anymore. You know, in fact, you can handle them. You can deal with them very well. So you achieve a kind of, well, a state of liberation. You are no longer weighed down by suffering, but you said you have rise above all the challenges. Isn't it wonderful? Well, we don't have angel in Buddhism, but you sort of like, oh, you lift yourself up and you radiate radiant light on yourself and others. Wonderful, isn't it? Yeah, I'm mixing my metaphors, sorry about that. Yeah. So the third one is that every moment of this life, not just, you know, in the future, but even now, every moment of your life is something precious. And you can do something about it. So for example, because I'm always teaching meditation, then people say, oh, meditation. I tried that 10 years ago. I haven't been meditating since. And I said, well, it's very simple. You can start again right this moment. We can stop talking right now. And then you just come back to your breath. Breathe in and out. And voila, you already meditate again. Right. So simple, isn't it? I'm going to talk. Finish talking, you didn't meditate, isn't it? But just that moment, you become aware. Oh, I'm distracted. Maybe 1 minute, 5 minute, 1 hour, 1 year, 10 years, 50 years, who knows, doesn't matter. In that very moment, you can choose and say, oh, let me just watch my breath. Breathe in, breathe out. Ta-da! You're already meditating. Okay? So, in one single moment, you can wipe out that whole gap of distraction from meditation, like 10 years, and you are back in meditation again. A single moment. And but this is just a specific example. But a single moment, you can do many things. We can choose to go down the old way, or we can choose something different. Right? Every moment brings with it new possibilities. Right? So this is the third thing we can appreciate. And say, oh, even in a single moment with this human life, I also can accomplish something different, something new. And so this is traditionally the three things that suggested to reflect on. But usually I don't do that, because when you meditate, you can't remember so many things. So what I want to introduce is this technique of, a different technique of meditating on analytical meditation, which makes things a bit easier, I hope, is to make use of a question, one or more questions, guiding questions. Right? So for example, this last point, I can ask myself, what do I want to accomplish with this precious human life? What do I want to accomplish with this precious human life? You ask yourself the question. A question is very powerful, because we are kind of oriented to try to answer questions. So if somebody asks you a question, you feel sometimes there's a slight obligation to try to answer it. Right? When you like people trying to sell you things, they ask you questions. They stop you and ask you questions. Never answer those questions, okay? But there'll be a second question. Before you know it, you may be signing something or buying something or whatever. Yeah? Question has a kind of compelling quality that you feel you want to answer it. So we can make use of it. So we can ask ourselves different questions. And the questions are open-ended. They are there to guide our attention, make us see things differently, or make us explore topics that we normally don't think about. So by asking ourselves, what do I want to accomplish with this life? I don't know. But nonetheless, in fact, the wheel turning, right? It asks you to think about it. And I have an image on how to do this kind of question, this kind of meditation with guiding questions. I say that your mind and heart is like is not appropriate for Singapore, because we don't really have this kind of thing. It's called a well in which you draw water up. We just turn on the tap, right? Okay. But there's a well which represents our mind and heart. And we don't know what's inside the well. We don't know whether there's water or it's dry, whether there's a lot of water or very little water, how deep is it. So what you do is you pick up a stone and then you drop it in. And then you listen. You say, ouch! Oh, there's a human being inside the well. Okay? So you drop the stone and you listen to the response. So you ask the question, what do I want to accomplish with this life of mine? You ask the question to yourself, to your mind, to your heart, and hopefully to somewhere deep within yourself, deep into your own unconscious. And you listen to what the response that comes off. The important thing is not to try to answer this question on an intellectual level. Because we are not looking for information. We are not like, we don't really want to regurgitate information. Why is the goal of Buddha? This is what I say, Buddha. What is the Buddha? Buddha is this. No, that's what we do when we do Buddhist examination. We just kind of regurgitate out everything. After all, you cannot change the definition of Buddha, right? Today I like the Buddha to be like this, be like that. No. So this is information. And in this kind of meditation, we are not looking for information. We are probing to hear what is within ourselves, in our hearts. We're trying to change old ways of thinking, old habits. So we want to probe deep into the realm of habits, which is usually unconscious or subconscious. So we ask the questions into our heart, into that realm as well. What do I want to accomplish with this life of mine? What is so precious of this life? What is so precious about my life? Why so unique about my life? What do I want to accomplish with this life? So we drop basically three different types of stones, and we listen to the different response. At first, when you do this kind of meditation, we're not used to it. Nothing will come up. Drop. Nothing. Drop again. Nothing. Now what's going on? What's wrong with me? No answer comes up. Basically, you need to find a way to communicate with yourself, to be able to have a dialogue with your own feelings, your hopes, your fears, your longings. So those are the realm of emotions of habits, basically, of emotions that we are working with. So we ask the question so that we can begin that journey, that process. But after a while, usually at the beginning, then I try to tell people, the pessimist, right? I don't want you to experience failure, so I try to say, you just make up some answers. Just get the, get the wheel turning. Just get things moving. So you just make up something. Then what do I want to accomplish with it? Right? I want to be a millionaire. And then, let's just say, that's the question, the answer you just make up. Then you will have something else to follow. Right? You will start to think, not a millionaire, not enough these days, Maybe I should be a billionaire. Billionaire, after all this depreciation, is no big deal. Can't even buy a condo, yeah. Can't even buy a HDB flat, I think, depending on which one you are looking for. Yeah. I think there was this 5-room sell for $1.2 million HDB flat. Millionaire, just 1 million is not enough, okay? So then you start thinking about it. And that's when you begin this inner kind of investigation and dialogue to discover for yourself, what is your view, your feelings about this topic? How do I view my life? Do I value my life? Do I see as precious, as unique? And what do I want to accomplish with my life? Important question to ask yourself, because they give you a kind of a sense of where you want to be. What are your hopes for yourself? What are your fears? What are your longings? And maybe when you become more aware, you can actually do something about it. You can bring them, fulfill them. Okay, so this is one way we can engage in meditation using guiding questions. Okay, so that's the information I have for this point. Any questions? These are very fun. Do you kind of have some idea what I'm suggesting? Yeah. So later on, we're going to do a meditation, and that's what I'm going to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you, I mean, you don't have to do it, but I will suggest you do the whole meditation again. And this time, we ask these three questions, one at a time. What is so precious about this life of mine? What's so precious about this life? So, and you see what comes up, you know, what are the things that you find or you think make your life precious? Right? Rubbish comes up, just put them aside, okay? Alright? So, and try to uncover, as we did last week, the gems in your life. The second one is, what's so unique about this life? Or do you think your life is like very common, you know, everyone the same? My life is the same as everybody. But maybe not. Your life, there's something very special and unique about your life. There's, you know, it's not repeated anywhere. It's not 3D print. You know. It's very special and unique to yourself. And there are many experiences in your life that confirm that only you have it. And then the third question, then what do you want to do with this life? What do you want to accomplish with your human life, precious? And I don't have a fixed answer. I don't expect you to give a Buddhist answer or right answer. But I'd rather you explore it for yourself and come up with your own answer to that. Okay? Sounds okay? Let's do a meditation together. And we explore these three questions. My God, I talked for 45 minutes non-stop. And I heard this kind of blah, 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 blah. Oh, I'm falling asleep. Okay, so let's do a meditation together. So please find a supportive, comfortable meditation posture for yourself, you know, sitting on the floor, in the chair. Most important is choose a posture that allows your, especially your back, your spine, to be comfortable. That it can be upright in a natural way. You don't have to tense up your back muscles in any way to straighten your back or to hold it up. Just one that allows your spine to be upright in its most natural, comfortable way, following its natural curvatures. And rest your leg. If you're sitting on a chair, it's good to have both feet planted firmly on the ground. And those of us sitting on the floor, then we try to sit in a cross-legged posture that provides maximum support for our body. Keep our body stable, feels very solid and firm. Hands and arms, you can rest your hands on your knees, or you can place one on top of the other and rest them in your lap. So whichever way that allows your shoulders to be as relaxed as possible. Don't have to tense up your arm muscles unnecessarily. Don't have to hold up your arms in any particular way. And usually I suggest people to just close their eyes completely. But at any point of time, you're most welcome to open your eyes to let in some light, especially if you feel very drowsy or sleepy. Maybe you can just take a break and just open your eyes and just look around for a while, and then you can go back into your meditation. So take a few moments, allow your body to find its way into this posture. Become really aware of sensations at the points of contact between your body and the floor, your body and the cushion or the chair. And see if you can feel that your body is resting on something very firm, solid and stable. Resting on the earth, on the ground, maybe while your cushion or the chair, and that your whole body is well supported in this posture. The body feels well balanced and safe in the posture. And imagine that given time, your body can start to loosen up. You can release any unnecessary tension and tightness. You can start to unwind. And just gradually, at its own pace, you can settle down comfortably into the posture. And then the next step is to give our body and mind some time to make the transition, put aside the agitation, the disturbance, or the excitement from earlier on, so that they can transition into a more meditative state. And for that, we can make use of our breath to help us. We can use our natural breath. See if you can notice the sensations of the breath at the different parts of your body. So quite often people notice the breath around the nostrils, where you can feel the air flow in and out of your body. And you may also notice the movement of your chest synchronized with the breath, a sense of expansion and contraction. And sometimes some of us may even notice the breath at the abdomen, a rising and falling movement as we breathe in and out. So see if you make the breath sensation as a support, something that we can bring our attention back to again and again, so that we can become aware of the breath flowing in and out, expanding, contracting, rising and falling. And as you return your attention to the breath, do not be upset or frustrated if you do notice your attention wandering off to thoughts, to sounds, to images, memories, and so forth. This is something quite natural, and all we need to do is to guide our attention and come back to the breath. Come back to the breath, feel the movements of the breath, and especially the out-breath. See if you can notice as you breathe out, there's a subtle sense of relaxation, a feeling of release. So as we breathe out and release, cover the outside. So each out-breath, as you become aware of it, is an opportunity to release, breathing out, maybe some of the tightness or tension or discomfort in your body can flow away with the breath. Maybe some of the thoughts or ideas, images, memories can also be released as you breathe out. Let's spend a few minutes at the beginning of the meditation. Just gently return our attention to the breath. And each time when we breathe out, we can mentally, in our mind, remind ourselves to release. So coming back to the breath again and again, and each time as you breathe out, imagine you're deepening the sense of release. You don't have to try to make anything happen, but you give permission that maybe some of the physical tension or mental agitation can be released with the breath. So now, having given some time for body and mind to make the transition, we're moving on to the next step, which is to go deeper into our meditation. And today we are going to meditate on appreciating our precious human life. And we're going to make use of three questions. And as usual, you are most welcome to ignore what I say. You can do your meditation whichever way that is most suitable for you. I suggest you can start by exploring the first question. What are the precious things in this human life of mine? What are the precious things in my human life? So you can frame the question in whichever way. And just like we drop a stone or a pebble into a well and listen to the response, ask that question to yourself, to your mind, to your heart, and see if you can listen to the kind of response that comes forth. What is so precious about this human life of mine? And you can answer it in whichever way you want. You can allow images to come forth. You can come up with different answers and try them out, see whether they fit. You can be patient and just ask a question and wait and see what comes forth from deep within yourself. What is so precious about this human life of mine? And as always, you can always come back to the question if you get distracted, you're not sure what is happening. And ask it again, what is so precious about this human life of mine? And as the answers come forth, feel free to explore them, to follow them, to go deeper into each one of them. And then ask the question again, to gather up your own answers for yourself. What is so precious about this human life of mine? And then feel free to continue with the first question if you want more time to explore it. Otherwise, you might want to ask the second question. What is so unique about this life of mine? What is so unique? What is so special? What makes it so unrepeatable? What is so unique about this precious human life of mine? And then, if you want to, then explore the very last question. What do I want to accomplish with this precious human life? What do I want to accomplish? What do I want to achieve with this precious human life? Okay, so that's a short 20-minute meditation on appreciating our precious human life. And there's no fixed way of doing this kind of meditation. So just now we now quite quickly go through three questions. But you can always just make one question the theme of the meditation and you can just reflect on it if you want to. Yeah. Okay, so any question about that, any comments about that? So what's the point of doing meditation like this? After you think about this, ask questions, try to think differently, recall something that normally you don't, you find a bit tiring because it asks you to channel your thoughts in a new way, in a different way, and you find it tiring. Which is like analytical meditation is really not very popular. People are like, calm and hiding. Don't want to think. You know, I just think. You know, I don't think. I spend the whole day thinking. You know, I want to stop thinking. But it's important to cultivate the habit of also challenge yourself to think differently. The whole point is you keep thinking the same thing. You know, no matter how calm you are, okay, you feel nice when you're calm. Then when the meditation finishes, what happens? You start thinking again. And you'll be the same old thoughts, right? The habit hasn't been changed. That's also one of the disadvantage of calm abiding or concentration type of meditation. Because while you are meditating, it feels very nice. And it feels quite nice afterwards. But fundamentally, there is no drastic change. There's no change in your perspective. There's no change in the way you think. There's no change in the way you look at things. And therefore, after a while, as your calmness wear off or something triggered, then the same old reactions, the same old habits will come up again. Right? So that's why we also need to do analytical meditation. We need to challenge a bit. We need to discover new perspectives, new ways of thinking. Yes? So you're saying when we are doing the contemplation and you find that your mind sort of enters the state of active debate, and what do you do with it? But it really depends on how you evaluate that thinking, the activity. You evaluate the activity, you feel that it's something beneficial. Sometimes it's good to question and to challenge even the Buddhist ideas, no? And if you are really trying to sort things out for yourself, then it's good to continue with that. But sometimes you feel that this thinking activity that's been triggered is not really helping, and you are kind of drifting further and further away from the theme that you are. You just kind of get sidetracked, basically. You start having a different kind of dialogue, or then you again say, you come back to the topic. And that's why a question is very helpful. Then when you feel that you are getting sidetracked, you ask the question again. You come back and say, oh, what do I want to accomplish with this life? Yeah. So you ask the question, you sort of bring the focus back to what it is that you are investigating, you want to focus on, and you start again. So it's a little bit like the meditation on breath. You notice that your attention has drifted off somewhere. So what do? You come back and reconnect with the breath sensation again. So it's the same thing. So you come back to the question, or come back to the topic that you are reflecting on. And when you come back, you can really see what you have been doing previously. Is it relevant or not relevant? And quite often, we do get sidetracked. We start, because our thinking is associative. We start with one thing, then you think of another. Off you go, like free association like that. Then you render, oh, that's very far off from what I start off with, and therefore we need to just come back to the topic. Yeah.
If you draw a blank, what do you need to refer to?
Well, that then maybe that's the answer of that moment. You know, you ask the question and you ask the question and you ask the question. Why? Okay, you haven't been thinking about this topic, isn't it? Or nothing come forth readily, or nothing come forth strongly in that moment, right? And that is, it's not unusual. And so that simply means that, oh, there are more work I can be done, I can do more work on this topic. Within the meditation, you might want to help it along a little bit. So sometimes, you know, like, a bit rusty, you know, you haven't been using that part of the, you haven't been thinking about the topic, then you want to lubricate things a bit, get things moving. That's why I suggest doing that. In fact, there's a wonderful exercise related to this that I discovered not so long ago, which is when I ask this question, what do I want to accomplish with this life? There is this exercise which you can try. It's, let me see. Yeah, like one of those things where you have a piece of paper and you draw a line and have two columns. And one column is, what do you want? And you write down the things you want in this life. Money, my own asset, property, or whatever, my investment portfolio. And you just write, don't be shy, okay? You don't have to show people. So this is what you want. And the next column is, what do you admire in other people? So you look around the people, other people, and you say, oh, what do I admire in those people? What comes to mind automatically in terms of what you admire in other people? Maybe they correspond. Yes, I really admire it. What do you admire? And then when you have the two lists, and then you can look, are they exactly the same? What you want for yourself, is it the same as what you admire in others? Then you have that gives you some idea what you want to accomplish in your life. But more often, it's a funny phenomenon if they are not the same. The two lists are different. What you want, is completely different from what you admire in others. And I find that in myself. And I was quite shocked at this discrepancy. So what I've been constantly telling myself, oh, I want this, I need this, I must have this, I long for this. And then when I thought, what do I admire? Now, what do I value? You know, what I see as wonderful or precious in others. These are the people that I admire. What are the qualities? What is it? It's a completely different list. It's a list that I admire compassion. I admire kindness. I admire the wisdom of someone. How incredible, how wise they can be in such a difficult situation. The courage, they can do it, no, I can't do it, no. And it's a completely different list from, I'm all, you know, very petty about this. Oh, I want this, I must have this. Yeah. Then I said, oh, why is there a discrepancy? And that got me thinking about what do I really want for myself in my life. So an exercise like this might get things moving. And then when you do the meditation, you might find new ideas can come forth more readily. Okay. What do you want and what do you admire? What do you want for yourself and what do you admire in others? Try this exercise. Maybe you are different. You synchronize. What you want is exactly what you admire in others. Wonderful. I don't know what on earth that is, but that will be your answer for yourself. Any other? Yes. You can. Yes, the sound of one. What is the sound of one hand clapping? Yeah. What is moon? Or this famous poem from Zen. Zen does use question. Because the questioning mind, raising doubts, questioning mind allow you to penetrate beyond your conceptual kind of habits, you know, because we are limited by our very familiar concepts. And in Zen tradition, they are looking for a breakthrough, an awakening experience. Yeah. This one is much more modest than this, thing though digging so deep. Yeah. What you can, like there's a Zen practice using the question, what is it? What is it? What is this? It's a strange question, yeah. But you literally ask it all the time, yeah. But this is not analytical meditation. Is different from Zen meditation, so it's not going so deep. Zen is aiming for a breakthrough in understanding of ultimate reality. Yeah. This is more kind of less ambitious, conventional. What do I want for myself? What are my aspirations? How do I view my life? So still very much on a conceptual level. So you would say that we are not digging so deep. We are simply trying to still working on our concepts, but we're trying to change our concepts. Previously, I think of my life like this. Now I see whether I can think of my life differently. Previously, I'm unsure of what I want to do in my life. Now I have some idea like what I want to achieve with this life of mine. So it's a very, maybe you would say it's more concerned with conventional reality. Thinking in both ways, in what sense? Yeah, this conventional reality is relative reality. So it's in a sense that we make discrimination like this is good, this is bad, right? This is what I want to achieve, this is not what I want to achieve. So we have that kind of polarity or duality. Yeah. So we are still at that realm, in that realm. Because if you go the Zen way, when you have a breakthrough, eventually when you have your awakening experience, you will find that it's very difficult to express that experience in words, because that experience is a form of non-dual experience, a non-dualistic experience. So it's not easy to capture it in words. Yeah. But this one, analytical meditation, is all preoccupied with ideas and words, and you will find that it's not so difficult to express your understanding at the end of it in words. Yeah. So that brings me to the last part is, what's the whole point of this meditation, this topic, appreciating our precious human life? So in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, we are taught different topics, usually they arrange it in a certain way, and we are taught to spend some time on each of the topics, to reflect, to think about it, you know, to meditate using analytical meditation. And previously, I also explained that when you come to a certain conclusion, you try to stay with it. You try to stabilize your attention on the conclusion that you have reached in that meditation. Like, for example, if I come to a point where in my reflection, what do I want to accomplish with this life? I say, I really want to, I'm really aspire to this idea of enlightenment. Right? And if that is my conclusion, I want to stay with it a bit. And almost I want to stabilize it. I want to affirm it for myself. You know, some kind of make a deeper impression, you know, to remind myself, that's right. That's what I want to achieve with this life. Okay. And so each of these kind of topic that we'll look at, they are trying to do something to our mind. We're trying to change our perspective in a bit by bit. So, as the topic, as title says, appreciating our life, our precious human life. So, the conclusion has something to do with a sense of appreciation, a sense of valuing this life. It's a very good countermeasure to thoughts of depressing thoughts, thoughts that view our life as worthless, as useless, as unworthy. Or view ourselves as unworthy of love or care or attention. Recently, this topic is coming up is compassion. And this idea, this day is quite a hot topic called self-compassion, yeah, in the therapeutic circle, cultivating self-compassion. And more than once, people say, no, compassion is not for yourself, not for myself. It's only for others. All right, so then, that's an interesting one. Then also there's a version of love is for others, not for self. But there is, in Buddhist circle and some years ago, a topic of self-hatred. come to the front. Yeah. They're having a conference involving the Dalai Lama and Western teachers. And someone brought up this topic of self-hatred. That people, I think this is in the West, people in the West actually hate themselves. They love others, but they hate themselves. They absolutely despise themselves. They cannot see any redeeming quality within themselves. They hate themselves. They hate their life. They hate everything. They feel like they are fake. No matter how successful they are on the outside, they feel like one day someone will penetrate the outer shell and they will see the real me. And they find they will be disgusted by what they find inside me. Self-hatred. And they were trying to explain this. They used this word. The Dalai Lama couldn't understand. What the heck they're talking about? What? Not that you're just developing yourself self-cherish, self-centered. You should destroy the demon of self-cherish, no, of self-centered. And here you are, this one. They don't cherish themselves. They hate themselves. They want to kill themselves. They think that they are the most despicable thing in the whole world. But what's going on? What is this? And probably that conference, that discussion, shows a cultural divide. That there are different cultures, different cultural backgrounds, do have different ideas and different things that we get caught up in. Yeah. And so self-hatred, I think, is something quite prevalent, I think, to some extent in modern society, modern urbanized, globalized society, where we have much weaker ties, community, familiar connection and ties, and we feel more alienated and isolated, and that sometimes that can turn in a negative way towards ourselves. Yeah. And of course, the Dalai Lama, the Tibetan, couldn't understand this concept at all. And so I turned the whole idea of this self-centeredness on this head. They like to translate, Tibetan Lamas like to translate self-cherishing. It's a negative state, right? It's like you value yourself more than others. So self-cherishing, like destroy the demon of self-cherishing. Which is terrible. If you give it to a person that suffers from self-hatred, what sort of terrible result will come out of it? Oh, destroy. I should hate myself more. I should not cherish. I should love myself. I should have no compassion and no mercy for myself. I should really, you know, wipe myself, beat myself to pulp. So sometimes, this kind of concepts need to be a bit more careful about how we translate it and how we apply it to ourselves. Yeah. I don't know why I'm talking about this. But the antidote to that is appreciating your precious human life, isn't it? You say, wow, it's so valuable. Why should I beat myself down? It's perfect. Not perfect, but it's so precious, so special, so unique. I need to value it. I need to take good care of it and make sure that I use my life in a way that is most beneficial, most meaningful. Okay, so that is that's why I talk about that. So if you secretly you suffer from self-hatred, then this is the topic to reflect a bit on, to see your life. Self-hatred is a distorted way of looking at your life. You highlight all the unpleasant aspects of your life, of yourself. You know, sometimes people have this body image problem. I used to joke, I still have a body image problem. But you look at the mirror and say, oh, I don't want to look at that part. Yeah. No. The more severe case that people who suffer from anorexia is that they can look at their reflection in a mirror and they can see something kind of like completely different from how you would see normally. They form a certain image in their mind of themselves and they fixate that on it, regardless of the objective reality. Okay, so that is the extreme form of self-hatred through a distorted body image. Yeah. And so a topic like this aims to change that kind of idea, you know, change the way of thinking and the way of feeling. And so if you are successful in applying this topic and meditate on it, you can, what you would look out for is this shift in perspective. That you start or shift in, maybe not so much perspective at the beginning, I said previously, a shift in your feeling. You may feel a bit different about yourself. You think, I'm quite special, yes. Of course, unless you are an egomaniac, then there's a different, narcissistic isn't it? That's a different situation, yeah, when you already have a big head. Yeah. But this is when we, just normal, ordinary people, we appreciate, the good thing of our life, you know, and we value it, and we also, and out of that, we want to use our life, live our life in a very meaningful and purposeful way. Okay. So when those feelings and thoughts come naturally to you, then you can see that, oh yes, my meditation on this topic has been successful. That there is a shift in feeling, a shift in thinking, and a shift in perspective with your life. Yes, you won't be meditating in this, on this topic in that way, yeah. It's not dangerous, but they will analyze it very differently. They will come to a different conclusion. A conclusion that is in line with what they are fixated on, yeah. Yeah. So that's why it's, that's why our, the eight freedom, one of them is freedom from holding wrong view, right? Because if you hold wrong view, then there is, in fact, it's probably one of the worst. Because that, there's very little other people can do for you, isn't it? No matter how much I try to persuade you, try to tell you differently, you are close to it, so you won't listen, right? And even if you yourself were to meditate, you would think along the old way of thinking, right? Because you have no, absolutely no intention of changing your mind, isn't it? So there are very little things you can do directly to, influence that. You can only hope that maybe if this person has some new experience or something different, that might catalyze a shift, maybe an opening, and even a willingness to, you know, consider something different. Otherwise, they will just get, they will be more close and close and close, and eventually, yeah, I'm sure we know of people in our life who just, you know, carry their own views and their own grudges and whatever it is they're holding on, and they can easily take it to their grave. They absolutely refuse to reassess, to rethink, you know, to consider anything different. And that is not uncommon also. No, but I don't think they will even want to do analytical meditation. Isn't it? If I'm right, I'm right. Why would I even consider your wrong view? Why would I even to meditate in your way? I'm already right. I know. No need to think about it. We don't even need to talk about it. So that's why one of the freedom is, isn't it wonderful that we don't hold on to, or we find within ourselves at least the receptivity or the interest to try something new and think about new things and different things, you know, and so that we are more open to new influences, new ideas, and we might find something new and exciting out of it. Right? Yeah, so that in itself is something wonderful. The fact that you arrive here, that's wonderful, isn't it? From a Buddhist point of view, of course. Yeah. Yeah, I think to yourself, oh no, they're all hopeless. You know, all these Buddhists, you know, they're just holding on to deluded views. You know, there's no point proselytizing to them. They're just gone. Yeah, so it's always relative in that sense. Yeah. Okay, so you're on the right path. Yes. Anyway, have a good week. Thank you for your attention. Thank you.